brought to you by Penguin.
Confessions, written and read by me, Edwin Sturton. Introduction. It's a cliché that once we can see middle age in the rearview mirror, we tend to fool ourselves into feeling younger than we look to other people. But it's still a shock to be hit with the evidence. It happened to me when a BBC producer curtsied on being introduced to me, actually bobbed down briefly at the knees when we began working on a programme together. At around the same time, my cousin and old friend James Sturton, a writer and art historian, told me at the launch of another friend's book that he'd been invited to write our host's obituary for a national newspaper. He added that he'd offered to write mine too, but was told that I'd already been done. After a beat or two, I decided to take this as a kind of compliment, rather than an intimation of imminent mortality, but it did raise all sorts of questions that have kept tugging at the corner of my mind. What on earth had the unknown author said about me? Did I mind, given that I'd never read it? Did I indeed mind whether or not anyone would read it, or how they'd react if they did? And did this mean, crucially, that I had, in my early 60s, already done everything of interest I was going to do? Could I still manage something sufficiently exciting to provoke the obituary's editor into the expense of a rewrite? The obituary episode came hard on the heels of an unwelcome reminder of one of those curveballs age can throw at you. My oncologist warned me that the impact of the chemotherapy I'd had a couple of years earlier was waning, and predicted that at some point in the following 6 months or so, I would probably need more treatment. It's now 7 years since I was first diagnosed, and I've got quite good at what he calls living with cancer, which mostly means not thinking about it, except when I have to. Now I had to think of it again. Prostate cancer is usually slow-moving, and even when it's incurable, as mine is, it can be managed for a long time. Doctors are, of course, reluctant to be too precise in their prognosis, but the admirable consultant who treats me at London's Royal Marsden Hospital is clear about the treatments currently available. They're all time-limited, and on the basis of what he said, it only takes a little maths to work out where I am. It seems likely that he will be able to stretch my years to the biblical 70, but I shall probably not celebrate my 80th birthday. The psychological impact of this knowledge is odd. It is, of course, nothing like being told that you have a very short time to live, a horror many cancer patients face when they're diagnosed. And it's perfectly possible that the science, which seems to move forward all the time, will always stay a jump or two ahead of whatever stage of the disease I've reached, so it really doesn't do to be too maudlin. For the most part, I plough on, enjoying both work and leisure, almost as if the cancer wasn't there. But the finishing line is now that bit clearer, and it will probably become more predictable as the disease progresses. That creates a tug, not unlike the one James set off, which is ever more insistent. A tug to reflect on the past, to look for some sort of sense and order in the helter-skelter life that's brought me, on the whole very happily, to this autumn day which I'm enjoying on the crest of an intoxicatingly beautiful hill at our home in southwest France. The clincher was an encounter outside the loo of a cafe in Sevenoaks. The death of the broadcaster Peter Sissons came as a real shock to many of those who'd worked with him and been inspired by him. 77 seemed too young for someone with such a great appetite for life, and most of us had no idea he'd been ill. I was touched to get an email from his agents with details of his funeral, and at London Bridge Station I bumped into another old hand from my days at Independent Television News. Michael Green had worked with Peter as an industrial correspondent in the days when Britain's trade unions dominated the news agenda. Our train delivered us early for the funeral, and he, his wife and I took refuge from the rain in a cramped little coffee shop down the road from the Church of St. Nicholas. Gerald Seymour, who'd escaped ITN before I arrived there by writing the bestseller Harry's Game, pitched up too, and the reminiscing began in earnest. The loo was on...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?